Hello, and welcome to the Cash News Podcast, informative conversations about all things cash and currency. Here's Tom and Sean.
We're back. Oh, hello, everybody. It's been so long. We're just talking over each other. We're excited to get out there and say hello to everybody. Thanks for joining us on the Cash News Podcast. Wonderful to see you, Tom.
See you as well. And I don't think we're going to spend too much time today. I think we've got to get back to getting a consistent podcast out just to say hello. And then when around events and guests, we'll do a little bit more. I mean, Sean, you've been out and about, and then you just came back from overseas.
I did.
Why don't you give the listeners the 5-second overview of what you saw or thought?
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind couple of weeks. I think it's that kind of spring conference season that we're all familiar with and running around in. And I apologize if I start hacking at some point here. I've got pollen like in my throat. I think it's a spring and you can see the pollen flying around outside. but anyway, yes, it's been a whirlwind couple of weeks. Couple weeks ago, mostly filled with a lot of tech conferences. I've been going to a lot of AI events lately, and some fintech events, both focused on AI and kind of real-time payments. So I did an event with the San Francisco Fed. Great talking out there on fintech and what it means for the payment industry. Some really good kind of forward-looking kind of challenges to get involved with AI and help kind of basically one of the main takeaways I had from that event was, you know, change in regards of how artificial intelligence is being used in the payments world is coming. And we should really all start helping formulate what that looks like, right? Like, let's not just have that change kind of thrust upon us by the tech industry, because it's just an evolution of the technology that's coming in terms of how we analyze data, how we interact with different payment systems, how fast we're able to spot fraud. Maybe there's benefits, but there's also the ethical challenges that come along with it. How's the AI is being trained, what that means for conclusions that people or the AI itself are drawing from the information it's intaking, and we just need to be on our toes with that and have things in place to monitor it, have guardrails in place, just to make sure that we're not introducing, I think the bias topic on AI is just a big one, right? In terms of the system is historically biased, and if we're basing things on biased data, the only way to fix biased data is by introducing another set of biased data the other direction. So you get into this vicious circle of, you know, does it make things better or does it perpetuate longstanding or new biases? Anyway, we could probably talk for an hour on that in and of itself. But there was that conference. Then from the San Francisco conference, did a DC conference, also focused on AI and financial services, some good financial inclusion talks on that. Very academic conference. Challenged my brain on a Saturday to open and think about some more academic aspects of implementing AI. And then last week, spent all week with Jens here at Currency Research at Money 2020 in Bangkok in Asia, where, you know, there were thousands of people talking about the latest and greatest in real-time payments, cross-border payments, applications of AI again, and just how real-time payments is helping transition the cross-border payments, or there's the ability working with a lot of fintechs to help get money from point A to point B, especially cross borders, faster and cheaper than is currently done. There's also a lot of talk in the crypto space. And when I say crypto space here, I'm kind of meaning stable coins and probably deposit tokens. So maybe not crypto, but stable coin, deposit token, digital currency, crypto, if you will. There is less talk on CBDCs than there has been in the past. I think it's kind of this deposit token world. CBDCs are still being talked about, but a little more behind the scenes, and it's more this kind of commercialization, digital asset, deposit token discussion. But again, all of it's kind of under the veil of, okay, or the through line is basically how to move money faster and more efficiently across borders. So that's a really quick update. But yeah, lots of interesting stuff going on.
Awesome. Yeah. So I actually spoke in February about AI at a small, I don't know, 300 person conference in Scottsdale, and Bias was a big section of what I spoke about. And, you know, you simplified what I always say. So the reason models are biased is because people are biased, right? The AI is not biased. It's the model that's created by the human. And the more you try to make it not biased, the more biased it becomes, because that doesn't work that way. So I don't know that there's a simple fix. And not to nail Google here, but Google, when they released a second version, it's actually version 3, they had a major issue that was really publicly seen, because they tried to make the model not biased, and it became ridiculously biased. Like, it was depicting people in the wrong race, like very famous people, just because the model was going, oh, you want me to do this instead of this. So it is a challenge. And when you're talking about inclusion, you know, it's going to continue to be a challenge. But I'm not sure it's as big as a problem as we think it is. I think it's a problem, though, and I'm optimistic that we'll come up with creative solutions. But at least in my experience, every time we as humans have tried to attack it, we've messed it up worse. So we've made it quite, because again, by design, you know, humans are biased, so the models become biased, and there's a whole bunch of challenges there. I'm most interested in, we kind of had a precursor conversation, like Sean and I always do, because this is when we get to catch up, aside from when we see each other, is I'm most interested in the fintech and AI world of, you know, what unforeseen risks are going to occur with the more advancements of AI. Like generative AI at its surface, there are a lot of theories out there, but you can almost compartmentalize what the risk is. But some of the other advancements with AI, especially in the coding space, is in theory, you can reverse engineer anything and in seconds go, hey, look at this and tell me the ways that it's vulnerable. That's hasn't been the case before. And today, just actually last week, there have been a couple new large language models that have been released. Like, for the one that sticks in my head is Microsoft released Phi, which is, they call it Phi Mini, which is a small model that runs on your phone, but it's open source. So it doesn't have some of those protections to say, if you go to Claude or ChatGPT or Gemini that are heavily monitored, and you ask it something nefarious, the model's trying to stop you. With some of these open source models, by design, they're made for the, hey, be responsible, use them. So I still believe that there is a storm of regulation coming. I don't know what that means. I think just this morning I read, and I don't know if it was in the journal or where I read it, because I consume a lot of news in the morning, but I read that, you know, Google, OpenAI, and Microsoft, along with a whole bunch of academics, you know, they started another AI responsibility committee that, you know, basically is self-governing with the White House. And self-governance doesn't work. We know that. We know every time we've tried that, it doesn't work, especially when you're talking about programs like today. Microsoft, OpenAI, Google are for-profit companies. So, you know, these CEOs have a duty to make money, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, so me as a business person says, you can't fault anybody who's a CEO of a company to say, I have to monetize my platform. We all hope that everybody will do the right thing, but the reality is, there's still a lot of unknowns. So I know that, I don't think I'm going to be able to make London. I know that your conference in London is heavy on AI. I'm going to really try to, even if I came for a day, because I've been so involved in the risk that, you know, I really want to flush out kind of the risk that, you know, robots are going to take over the world isn't really probably what we should be worried about right now. We probably should be worried about the fact that these AI with the advancement in silicon could do math that we've never done before. And a lot of the protections and things that we've put in place become obsolete much quicker. So those are things that I'm really, really interested in. And this conference that I did in February, you know, I'm always, you know, Sean, I'm always like, all right, how did everybody receive it? And, you know, this was a small user conference that I would say people were intimately involved. So I got a lot of feedback, which was awesome. And it overwhelmingly was like, it was a really interesting topic. I just wish it was more positive. And I went back and I'm like, I didn't think I was negative. I was just actually, I used real examples of things that occurred that might not be mainstream media that are occurring. And so I dug in with some product guys there and they said, look, you know, some people want to see the bright side. Some people want to be neutral. Some people want to be in the middle. So I went back and I looked at the presentation and I said, okay, so in all of the examples we used, they were real examples. And unfortunately, a lot of them didn't make mainstream media. So people didn't really read about it. So in some cases, they were like, wow, I didn't know that could happen. And we only touched a little bit on the fintech side there. But, you know, my general rule of thumb is, and I oversimplify this like you did with the bias, is, hey, if it took a bad guy or a nefarious actor weeks to write malicious code before, it now takes them seconds. And that's the easiest way to define it, seconds. You know, and when I mean seconds, I mean seconds. Like you can reverse engineer code in 5 seconds today that you would have in sometimes weeks or days. So we definitely have some interesting things that are going to occur. On the flip side, the positive side is I actually think there's going to be some really fantastic customer benefits from a customer experience standpoint. Also, I think there's going to be an underbanked or underserved market. I think there's going to be things that are identified with AI that today, anecdotally, we look at. But I do believe what I'm seeing is you're going to get better data in a more refined area, which is going to allow people to make better decisions. So very, very interesting time. So
it is super interesting. And I think the underbanked area is a fascinating one with AI in particular, because that too, again, cuts both ways, right? Where the benefits there are amazing. When you look at some of the ways that they're looking at doing alternative credit scoring, basically, like instead of just using your Equifax score and everything that's been used forever. And I know they've tried to improve it and it's somewhat better now than it used to be, but nonetheless, there are alternative models, right? And it's using AI and it's essentially, again, depends what side of the spectrum you're on for this, but essentially, you know, you have AI crawl through your phone more or less and figure out, okay, where's all your money coming from? Where's all your money going? And it gets a holistic view of your financial state, right? And then makes a decision. But it also goes as far, and again, some of this is like, how true is this? I don't know, but it's what I've heard, right, about these various events, is that, you know, there's some pieces of when you're doing a credit application, is your phone laying down horizontally on the surface, or is it up like you're holding it, based on some intel that, you know, there's not server farms, there's people, a bunch of people sitting at desks. I'm blanking on what that's called, but, you know, just keying in a bunch of data falsely. So there's things like that. Or who are you texting? What's in your texts? All these sorts of things that could get swept up into this alternative profile of you, which is a little scary, but.
So I talked a lot about that. So, I mean, I think, you know, we're in this age of, we gave up privacy for convenience years ago. I say it all the time. And anybody who tells me I'm wrong, I'll go back to like when we were in DC in the first conference and people are like, you can't track me. And I'm like, yeah, we can. Like, of course you can. You use apps that you give permission to people track you, and then those same apps sell to data brokers that I can, that anybody can buy the data. Like, it doesn't matter who you are, you just need to pay for it. And believe it or not, we're letting people do that. So you are right. I mean, this device is the most convenient, you know, convenient to have when you need it. But it is, when I did this talk, I said there are 19 different sensors on it. So you're 100% right. It can tell you how fast you type, what direction you are. And there are all these models that could associate, well, Tom types faster than this person. So what does that mean? Or when he's walking while he's typing. So all of those things matter. There are device ID triggers for fraud to say, this device is not moving, it's laying flat, it looks like it has an external device. So those, I think those are all good indicators of fraud. Where it becomes a challenge is, what if, you know, you have an impairment that causes you to be a lot slower than someone, or has features like me, I'm visually impaired. So if you looked at my accessibility, you would see that my phone is totally different than the average users. What does that mean? I don't know that it means anything, but it could. So we are in this data-rich environment, and I don't want to misquote. I saw a professor speaking recently at an academic event, and you know, I don't remember the specific term, and I wrote it down, and I can't find it because I actually was talking to someone else about this. But you know, we create more data in a day today than we did in a lifetime before. And there was actually statistical data, because everything you do is tracked on your phone and by design, how fast you walk, how slow you walk, where you drive, how fast you drive. I mean, literally anything you can think of. And then if you wear a wearable device, you're also giving it biometric data of like health data. So you really create this model that, you know, could you get to the point where a loan, you know, or a credit score is based on, hey, this guy, he doesn't walk, he has an accelerated heart rate, he has an accelerated blood pressure, like, we don't want to give him a loan, he's a risk. Yes, absolutely. I think Europe has done a really good job of putting better privacy guardrails into it than the US has, and I think we're following suit there some places. But I also would go back to say, as we become more digitized and more with AI, there is somebody, and this is theoretical, I put the quotes, I mean, everything you put into any of these AI engines is being collected and it's being parsed and being used. So I would tell you that what I see with a lot of the AI is that you're going to see models trained on, hey, Sean and Tom are of a similar age, a similar demographic, and a similar environment, and they use AI for these things. So this is now data that we can market again. It's marketable data. It really is. Everything we do is that. So the good part about this is, in theory, and this is very theoretical, you can create much better risk models to identify bad behavior. You also can create models that preclude certain people based on some of those behaviors. And so that's that seesaw, double-edged sword that we hope doesn't happen. And you mentioned the credit score. I think, you know, the Fair Credit Act and all the things, we've come a long way, but it's still a fairly drawn out old process to identify, hey, this person's high risk, low risk. But in some cases, it's all we have. I do see a future. We already see it with car insurance, where if you give more data and you exhibit good behavior or good habits, you'll benefit. But the latter won't. So, you know, there, you already see car insurances where if you allow them to track you while you're driving and you show good, that they'll give you a lower rate. So the question is that good or bad? Well, it's good if it's opt-in. It's bad if you're forced to do it, right? I don't know. So we're in a very interesting time, and our kids are going to be in even a more interesting time, because I think it's going to be pretty wild in the next few months. So what do we – I know we have very soon. It feels like only – it's probably like 2 weeks, right? We're going to be in Texas.
Yeah, we're going to be in Texas, talking kind of the flip side of all this real-time AI fintech stuff. We're going to talk about what's the latest and greatest in banknotes and banknote technology and – How are some of these technologies like AI that we're talking about, applicable in the banknote space? That space too is evolving rapidly with new security features and new ways of analyzing data and just what's the latest and greatest. So yeah, we're in Fort Worth talking about banknotes. So that will be very exciting. And then a couple weeks after that, less than a month after that, we have our Global Payments Conference, Global Payments Summit and Central Bank Payments Conference in Kuala Lumpur. So that's exciting as well, where a lot of this stuff, particularly around real-time payments, and we'll be talking
about. It's definitely exciting, and I won't be at that one, and you can enjoy that flight.
Or flight. Thanks. Yeah. It's just like the one that I just did.
Yes. Enjoy those flights for sure.
30 hours. Yeah, it's a good time. Yeah,
and the weather, it's an interesting time of year to go to both. How was the weather in Bangkok? Was it –
Hot. It was dry but hot. Yeah, there weren't – it was kind of dry season. I mean, humid as all hell, but dry season, no rain. But, yeah, it was like 100 – it was like over 100 with the humidity in the morning when you woke up.
100 degrees, like, 98% humidity every day. But it's not raining. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
it's definitely a warm climate for sure. Like you get a different feel, and I'm sure your allergies didn't like coming back after that. Yeah.
No.
So I think we'll wrap it up. I think we'll be in Fort Worth together.
We'll do some live episodes while we're there. Should be exciting.
Should be very, very exciting on the money side. The one thing I'll say about your comment about the banknotes is, and I always tell this story about my local bank branch bought back tellers. It's interesting. And I was having a conversation where they said that based on feedback in some of these, what I guess they turned them into like, to have the much more robust ATM, and it's a more of a wealth management branch. They bought back tellers. And this is like a weird kind of quasi thing, is I got frustrated a few times there because I needed cash to pay like contractors, and it was a pain in the gazoo. Now there's a teller and they're like, hey, do you need help? And I'm like, no. Like my behavior changed because I was so used to it, even though I was so frustrated with it. And then I was talking to them, funny enough, I needed a teller because I had a check that was issued to me from Canada and the machine couldn't take it. Yeah. So I went to the teller and was talking, and, she had said, hey, we've got mixed responses now. Like people were like, yeah, well, people were really frustrated when there wasn't. And now they're like, whatever, like we changed the way we bank now. And she actually said a couple of the folks stopped going to that branch, and they were actually able to identify that. I was talking to her and she said that they were forcing people to drive, small business owners to drive. So they made the decision. So immediately in my head, the AI model came in as like, is someone somewhere crunching numbers going like, uh-oh, like we need to put this back in, because it's an expense, clearly an expense to, first of all, they cut a hole in a wall, right? They put back, they did it, and she said it was several hundred branches. So I'm always interested in the brick and mortar physical aspect of banking. And so when I was thinking like, good, we're going to go to the banknote. And while I'm not a heavy cash user, we talk about this all the time, I tend to always have cash, and not because the podcast or because we do, it's just, I always feel like there's that need, and there's so many times that there is a need. I'm not sure it's as big as a need as it was before, but very, very interesting. I know off topic, but when you mentioned the banknote, it immediately flared that like this weekend I was there and I'm like, whoa, you guys cut a hole in the wall and put tellers back. That's weird.
Yeah, no, I mean, and again, we'll talk about it when we're there in Fort Worth, but it's still, I say, even with all this tech and real time and all that sort of stuff, cash is still in demand. And I think you're right. I mean, I think people change their behaviors and they adopt new things, but when you still look at the numbers, it's still growing out there. There are still users, there's still a use for it. When you need it, you need it. You have to go get it. So the infrastructure has to be there to support it still, yeah, for sure.
And I'm wondering, you know, maybe you and I can noodle on this. So if anybody's listening and knows, I'd love to have someone join us that is an expert in unbanked population, because I am sure the Journal had this, and actually NPR, a couple different people talked about the Journal. Actually, there was a big article written about immigration, and a significant 4% of their 4% of the U.S. population increased with what would be considered undocumented individuals. So they're going to be unbanked. So I'm wondering, you know, if that's a real number, did we really add? If that's what we know about, how much bigger is it? Did we really add 20 million people to a population that can't be banked? What does that mean? What does that mean for banking? What does that mean for cash? And I'm wondering if there's anybody who's listening that can kind of join us and show us what you're seeing. And I think the thing I'm seeing, again, this is anecdotal, I'm not an expert here, is that they were talking about Oklahoma, which was not a state that I would think would have a higher unbanked population, but apparently there are a lot of folks living in Oklahoma. So before, it would be Arizona, New Mexico, Texas border states, so normally where you'd see a higher population. I'm not sure that that's actually going to be the trend based on this Journal report. And the Journal report was not an opinion report. It was very numbers driven based on what numbers they had. So if anybody's listening and has some info there, I'd love for someone that really knows about it. And maybe Sean, you and I can try to dig up and see if there's someone that can come on and say, hey, what does this mean for us as an industry? Yeah. Because I mean, I would think if you injected 20 to 30 million people into a population that could only use cash, that would have some level of impact. That's not a small number of people. You know, they're saying 4.5% is what they know about what's actually been able to be classified. So this is where the Journal was making estimations. They said it probably doubled that. Then you're in that range. So, yeah, definitely. If you're listening, come jump on. And Sean, it's always good to see you, my friend.
Likewise, great to see you as well. Great to talk to everybody. A pleasure, as always.
We'll see you in 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, take care, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Cash News Podcast. We hope you found this episode insightful. Don't forget to like and review us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter, and be sure to visit us at thecashnews.com to stay up to date with the latest on the world of cash. Thanks again for listening to the Cash News Podcast.